everyone, welcome back to the Internet Report, where we uncover what's working and what's breaking on the internet, and why. This week we're talking about back-end issues, including strategies for spotting and responding to them. We'll cover a number of service disruptions that appear potentially back-end related, including incidents at AI company Anthropic and social media platform X, as well as Alaska Airlines, the Commonwealth Bank, and Gong. I'm Barry Collins, and I'll be hosting today with the amazing Mike Hicks, Principal Solutions Analyst at Cisco Thousand Eyes. As always, we've included chapters in the episode description below, so you can skip ahead to the sections that are most interesting to you. And if you haven't already, we'd love you to take a moment to give us a follow over at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen. The outages and service disruptions we're discussing this week all appeared potentially back-end related. What are some of the common signs of back-end issues?
So to start with, the front door's accessible. And what we mean by that is we can actually reach the service, or appear to reach the service. That then rolls out sort of the network itself. So we're getting to that system there. We also then sort of have multiple failures at once. So the access points all fail. So where we're trying to get into this system, we see multiple services or multiple things actually going down from there. If we look at the geographic spread, it's not related to one specific network. We have some sort of systemic network failure or a particular provider or transit provider that's going down. We're going to be typically related to a particular region or area from there. But the fact we see sort of impact across the globe points us to something being within that back-end service itself. So the network path is fine, but we're seeing application errors. And what I mean by that is we started to see sort of 500 type errors or 400 errors. What that means is we're actually reaching the service, but we're getting some sort of condition that comes back from there itself. Then they can sort of manifest themselves as sort of intermittent or inconsistent behavior. So the service appears to be working 1 minute, then fails another. And then we'll sort of see error messages coming back, or we can see error messages coming back. So systems enter fail-safe modes. So again, we're reaching that front system, but this tells us that something's gone. It's almost gone into protection mechanism. We can reach the service, but the service itself isn't functioning. And typically you sort of see timeout errors as well. But all of these then are sort of coupled with this fact we see a lack or negligible network impacts themselves. So I don't see high loss rate. Latency stays pretty much the same. So therefore we're looking at conditions within those signals that sort of tell us there's something happening in the back end.
When IT ops teams identify that a service disruption is due to back-end issues at a third-party provider, what should they do? How does understanding it's a back-end problem change their response?
So rapid diagnosis is the key here, to quickly determine that it's not your network or your system, because we need to be able to sort of take the correct action straight away there. And then once we've identified that, if we know it's in a back-end service, we can confidently sort of tell the users it's not us, it's them, or really start to define where it is and what plans we need to take. Once you've identified the fault domain, you can then start to sort of take actions themselves. Now, if it's within your system, there's actions you can take. If it happens to be a back-end service you're relying on, you can consider what processes you need to put in place. Is that switching to another service? Is that sort of using an alternative system? Or is it just simply sitting and waiting? You've identified where that problem is. Typically, the stuff that's impacting this application layer or this back-end services layer is going to be outside of your control. So there's only a certain amount you can actually do to it. So what you need to do is to understand, say, where it is. So therefore, then you can take steps to continue the business continuity to make sure you can still operate from there. But you do that from a known position. And one of the things that sort of comes up after this is also sort of document what went on. If there is a system and you've discovered that your whole operation relies on it, we weren't able to remain productive during this period. Post-event, you can easily sort to start to put in processes and mitigation plans. If this should occur in the future, this is what we'll do.
Users of Anthropic's AI assistant Claude were met with HTTP 429 error messages when they attempted to access the service on October the 3rd. Explain what happened here, Mike.
So the outage actually impacted a whole range of services from Anthropic. So the actual front end, the Claude AI, the Claude Code, and the Claude API, as well as the console. So sort of affecting right across. So straight away, that sort of gives us a little bit of a clue that we started to see something effectively that's application-wide or something that's sort of controlling the overall services themselves. So what I observed was these HTTP 429, which is a too many request errors. Now, these were globally, so across all our vantage points, I could see this error happening at the same time. And then again, if I was actually trying to access this from a browser, I saw this rate exceeded, where I actually couldn't connect to Claude to actually get some messages through there. So we're getting these 429 errors coming back to the system. So we know we've reached the system itself, but we couldn't actually execute some sort of function on there. So we're observing these globally. So therefore, we can sort of start to tie this back into that backend system itself. Now, if I actually think about what a 429 is, it typically would mean sort of systems overloaded. It's some sort of throttling mechanism, but we came back. So I said, I've had too many requests. I want to sort of push back on that a little bit. So the system initiates this 429, sends back, and it acts as this flow control mechanism, essentially. So the fact we see that, we typically expect that to be a load condition. Now, but what I saw then was happening sort of simultaneously. I saw this across the globe, but also I saw no other conditions or no other symptoms that would sort of be typically of a load situation. And also, we've got to remember we're talking for this highly distributed architecture. So for it to start to get a load issue might mean it's something sort of in the back end there, but there's no traffic spike you can actually sort of pick it to. Anthropic themselves sort of confirmed their status page that it was an upstream provider that triggered this situation, exposed an unexpected error within their own infrastructure. Now, the fact then that sort of confirmed to us really that 429 wasn't actual overload. It was a symptom of something sort of much deeper.
That much deeper element appears to have been the rate limiter. So how do rate limiters work? And why do you think the limiter may have been the cause of this issue?
So if we think about a rate limiter, we have centralized rate limiting. So again, we're dealing with this distributed environment there. And the reason you have it there is because you can't have each server sort of independently track the limits or users because a system could bypass it. So you can make, say, 100 requests to server A and 100 requests to server B and 100 requests to server C, which is sort of 300 when your actual limit is only 100. And if we're thinking about sort of services like Claude, this is critical because each request requires sort of an expensive GPU compute time. If you're able to bypass that, you start to sort of impact the computational resources. So you're overloading that system and people pay for that system there itself. You have these mechanisms in place to sort of prevent these unlimited calls being made. Now, the reason this is globally controlled is, again, because I'm dealing with distributed architecture, I can actually sort of hit each service in each area there. So that's what I'm saying about hitting server A in this area here and server B in this area there themselves. So it works like a centralized scoreboard that all servers check. The user makes a request to the server, it gets routed to the closest one to themselves. But before processing, the server's going to ask the central rate limiter, has this user hit their limit? The rate limiter is normally like a very fast sort of in-memory database and it keeps a running count. And remember, it's got to do this across the entire environment. These can handle millions of these checks per second. If we're under limit, the request proceeds and the counter increments by one. If we're over, then the server rejects it and you get the 429 error. If the central scoreboard, the rate limiter fails, it will normally fail open. So it stops checking the limits and it allows all traffic to go through. Or it can actually fail close. It sort of basically stops limits and just rejects everything with these 429s. Obviously, you don't want to fail open because of the situations we've talked about there. So why'd they fail close? It's to protect the backend database itself. So it stops services from like a flood of uncontrolled traffic when its protection layer is down. So it's kind of like a security door, like the watertight doors that sort of come down and close things up from there. Why then I think it was the rate limiter is that I saw global simultaneous 429s plus these rate exceeded messages and the service was actually reachable. So this is a classic rate limiter failure pattern.
X experienced a service disruption on October the 1st. What did you observe of this one, Mike?
Around 4:46 a.m. UTC, we started to see some sort of disruption. Now, the main portion of this lasted around 1 hour, 45 minutes, and there was some residual instability sort of during what looked like a recovery period at the end there. The first thing we saw was these multiple regions affected. It was kind of spotty, but sort of widespread around the whole area there. Then if we actually looked at it, we sort of saw these three distinct phases of failure. These kind of important, so it sort of gives us an idea of what was going on there itself. So to start with, we saw effectively service degradation, where we could actually reach the services themselves or appear to reach the services and see just a logo, right? So we just see the X logo on the screen. But then if we actually look within the waterfall itself, we saw the JavaScript resources timing out. So it was this black screen with the X logo across there. The next stage of that we saw was a complete request failure. The page request was sort of timing out. So when we're actually looking for this, we actually couldn't see it. And it was just this blank white screen that got rendered at that point there. And then the third stage of this, this is a repeatable pattern we saw across all our vantage points, was this something went wrong, but don't fret message was coming up on the screen. This is something that's generated by X themselves, and it's an application shell loading, like sort of detecting its own failure. So again, it starts to give us these indications of what's going on in the system there. So we had, again, had this front door pattern. So users could reach the CDN endpoints. It's going to go to your local one, so they're geographically dispersed. We got responses initially, but there was unable to sort of retrieve this back-end service. They sort of weren't working. This kind of tells us that we're looking at the back-end. Again, although we're not seeing errors at this time, we're effectively being able to reach the system itself, or we could reach the front door, we could reach the CDNs. We could actually see that page, the shell actually loading and sort of rendering. So therefore, we could see that the network connectivity is sort of fine. The problem was the CDNs reaching or getting information from the origin or those back-end servers themselves. Interestingly enough, when it started to come out, we saw exactly the same phase pattern in reverse. We saw those, sorry, something went wrong, but don't fret, it's not your fault messages on the screen. Then went to the white screen, then went to the X logo, and then connectivity was restored.
CDNs generally help massive sites such as X meet demand, but in this instance, the CDN only let users see part of the site. Explain why.
So there's some things that CDNs do really well. So they can cache and serve static content. So we're thinking of images, logos, basic HTML and CSS. These are served from that edge server, so it's close to the user. So this is content that I retrieve all the time. So rather than constantly going back to the origin, I sort of get that information. So then what happened in this case, the CDN successfully delivered that initial page, so the resources. And this is why we got that X screen coming up there. But that's only part of it. The application itself, and we talk about in general terms here, we need more than these static files. And obviously with talking some sort of real-time application or with retrieving information, then we're going to need that. But again, from a general perspective, we'll need things like, you know, JavaScript resources to make the app actually functional. You have API calls to fetch the user data, the posts, the timelines, application configuration services, and again, this real-time data sort of needs to be served itself. Now, where it broke and where we're looking at within the waterfall we actually saw, we saw these JavaScript bundles were timing out or returning no response. And this is where CDN sort of can't help. Because if I can't get that backend API or they're failing or timing out, the origin server's not actually responding to the request for this dynamic content, then the actual CDN has nowhere of actually getting the information. But from our perspective, what it actually tells us is we can get to that front door, we can get to the system, and we can see this quite clearly by the domain we're going to. So we're actually going from there. We see we're being served out from here. And then we can see the failure when we look through the waterfall pattern itself. So it tells us, again, network's fine. We can get to the system itself. This is something within that backend system itself.
Now let's do a quick roundup of some other issues you've detected recently. Alaska Airlines website experienced some problems on September 25th. What do you think the root cause of this incident might have been?
So what we observed on this was intermittent failures. This was going specifically to alaskaair.com. Some requests we saw were actually succeeding. Others were getting these 503 errors or timeouts themselves. So we'd see this pattern from a degradation perspective. We'd sometimes see a healthy server. Then we'd see sort of a failed server with a 503. And then in some cases, actually timing out itself. The fact we're seeing those 503s told us the backend server was unavailable or one particular function within it. So remember, we're talking about an airline's website here, so there's various functions on that. So it wasn't that the whole of the backend was down, it was one particular function that was actually sort of retrieving that information. And that's what I was actually looking through for my tests. So the fact then we sort of see these 503 errors, again, tells us that we're getting some sort of response from itself, so it hasn't immediately failed. We're getting this status code coming back from there, so we can actually effectively rule out the network. The fact that it was intermittent as well, with no underlying network conditions, again, points us to that application backend. So what we're really doing is starting to look, combining all these signals together, and therefore then sort of come to this diagnosis to say, we can reach the system, we can get to the front door, and sometimes we can load part of the page, other times we actually can't get to there, and therefore we're looking at something within that backend system itself.
Australia's Commonwealth Bank experienced an outage that affected both online and physical ATM services on October the 2nd. What did the nature of this outage reveal?
So this appeared to be a multi-channel failure. So what I mean by that is it affected the mobile app, the online banking, and the physical ATM network itself. They all appear to fail at the same time. And when I say fail, there was no sort of functions itself. Although these were looking at different systems, when we come to that back-end system itself, there is a lot of shared infrastructure, so things like authentication systems, authorization services, and that core banking application we're looking for the source of truth. So the fact we had all these failures, again, we're looking for that single point of where they come together. Not necessarily a single point of failure, but some sort of environment within the backend itself. The other clue to this was the ATMs entered a standby mode. So it wasn't just error message, it went to a standby mode. And a standby mode is a programmed fail-safe state. So they enter this state when they detect they actually can't reach the service, they need to safely authorize the transactions. So again, protective behavior, not a crash. So I'm not able to reach that sort of back-end system itself. The fact that it occurred across all these channels at the same time, again, points to something within that back-end itself and probably something fundamental within the system. So something deep within the authorization chain, probably within the core banking system or the authentication service, not in that physical front end or that web end service themselves.
We have a new intelligence platform, Gong, experienced a service disruption on September 25th. Explain why this had all the symptoms of a back-end related issue.
So what we saw here was a progressive degradation. So unlike a sudden crash, this isn't unfolding stages over time, sort of painting a picture of a system struggling and slowly collapsing. So it started with these initial timeouts. The requests were reaching Gong's infrastructure, but they're getting no response. Sort of like calling a restaurant where the phone rings, but nobody picks up. So they're just overwhelmed or busy in the back end. They're doing stuff there. The middle phase revealed sort of a mix of different errors. So we saw 502s, 503s, and 504s. There weren't any repeatable pattern there, but the pattern itself is a signature of a distributed system where the different components are sort of failing different ways at the same time. Some servers were completely unresponsive. Others were just not responding, appearing to crash sort of mid-request. Others recognized the problem and sort of gracefully refusing. We can't actually get there itself. Then once you got into the main part of this outage there, it sort of showed these 502 bad gateway errors, and these became more dominant. So we've seen these response timeouts and these 502s. Now, the 502, again, means we've received an invalid response. Yeah, that's a generic message. What we're saying is we actually can't get to that back-end system. And it kind of indicates that the process is sort of a crashing mid-request or some sort of dependency failing. This overall pattern tells us that we're looking at this back-end issue. Again, we're looking at 502s. We saw nothing within the network itself, and it deteriorated as sort of load and resource exhaustion continued. And these cascading failures sort of started to impact it overall.
Thanks for the deep dive into those outages, Mike. And now let's turn to the overall outage trends. What have we seen in recent weeks?
So looking at the week of September the 22nd to the 28th, we observed 305 global outages. And that represented a slight 1% increase from the 302 outages we saw the week prior. So through most of September, we were seeing this elevated plateau hovering around 300 outages per week. And it's been pretty consistent throughout the month. But then something changed. During the week of September the 29th through October the 5th, we saw global outage experience a decline, sort of dropping 26% to just 226 outages. This drop is significant because it marked the end of that sustained period of elevated disruption levels that had characterized most of September until we eventually came off this plateau. In the US, the outage declined to 171 during September the 22nd to the 28th, and that was a 6% increase in the previous week's 161 outages. Then during September the 29th through to October the 5th, the US outages dropped sharply to 132, which is a 23% decrease from the previous week. So when we look at the full two-week period from September the 22nd through to October the 5th, the US accounted for 56% of all observed network outages. So the US continues to represent the majority of global network disruptions activity.
And given that we've now ticked over into October, what about the month-on-month figures?
When we look at the full month comparison, the global network outages increased 18% from August to September. In August, we saw 1,117 outages, and that jumped to 1,316 in September. So this uptick actually follows a historical pattern we observed in previous years, where the network activity tends to intensify when businesses and institutions resume full operations following the Northern Hemisphere summer. So we're seeing people coming back from vacations, schools starting up, that sort of thing, driving increased network activity. The US showed an even more pronounced increase, 41% month over month. Outages climbed from 517 in August all the way up to 730 in September. So the US increase was higher than the global average of 80%. And this seasonal pattern, this September increase, is something we've consistently observed in prior years. It's almost become predictable at this point.
And that's our show. Please give us a follow and leave us a review on your favourite podcast platform. We really appreciate it. And not only does this ensure you're in the know when a new episode's published, it also helps us to shape the show for you. You can follow us on LinkedIn or X at ThousandEyes, or send questions and feedback to internetreport@thousandeyes.com. Until next time. Goodbye.